This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. In 2020, approximately 49,000 people in Malaysia were estimated to be newly diagnosed with cancer. Now, this number is actually expected to rise to 66,000 new cases annually by 2030, which is not a long time away. And more alarmingly, we are hearing that new patients in their late 20s to early 30s, so really young adults, are also being diagnosed with cancer. So joining me in the studio today, consultant clinical oncologist Dr. Jensen Saw, to tell us more about the trend of colorectal cancer among young adults and why we need to be more vigilant about cancer screening in the younger population. We'll also learn about some signs and symptoms of colorectal cancer to look out for. Dr. Jensen, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Good. Nice to meet you.
Now, let's look bigger picture a little bit first before we dive into colorectal cancer specifically. But when it comes to that trend that I mentioned earlier about rising numbers of certain types of cancers among younger adults, what are we really seeing in terms of the trend and the numbers, as well as the types of cancers that are prevalent?
So definitely, we are looking at an increasing numbers of patients diagnosed with cancers. So I would say, in a way, it's also relatively partly because of the rising population. So, and the accessibility to healthcare is way much easier nowadays. So, in a way that the detection rates are also has increased. So, yep, like what you say, that I often do encounter more and more numbers of younger patients that comes with cancers in my clinic. Mm. Yeah.
Are you seeing particular types of cancers?
Well, the most common cancers were still, according to our National Cancer Registry, the second publication that was dated back in 2012 and 2016 actually showed that the most common cancers in Malaysia, with both genders combined, you have the breast as top of the list. Then you have colorectal cancers, then goes to lung, then you have head and neck cancers, and as well as prostate cancers. So my line of job, basically, I'm focusing more on the solid tumor. Usually when we talk about cancers here, we often relate to either it's a solid tumor or it is blood types of cancers. For example, like leukemias, lymphomas. Mm. So if we were to exclude that, then I would say the one that I mentioned earlier, that would be the top five most common cancers in Malaysia. Mm. So other than that, of course, there are certain cancers that are actually more predominant at a younger age. For example, like in men, we tend to see like testicular cancers. We also see a fair share numbers of bone cancers that happens as well in the younger age adolescents, for example. Yeah, so there are certain types of cancers that are actually age-defined, but there are also, nowadays, we often tend to see cancers that happens in the older age also being picked up fairly early.
Mm. And when we say early, what are the age groups that are now we are seeing? What is the bracket we're seeing them in?
So we used to say that in general, cancers are often detected at the fairly older age. We are looking at something like picking up somewhere between 50s, 60s. But there are also a fair share number of cases actually that comes at the age of 40 or the late 30s. Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, that it's partly because I think people nowadays, they are more health conscious. So knowing that some of them may have some family histories, so they decided to get themselves checked early.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's actually a good trend, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is because it clearly shows that people nowadays they are more concerned about health. I think partly because it could be because of family commitments and all that. They could be a sole breadwinner, so they need to make sure that they are in good health in order to do so. Yeah. Mm.
So when it comes to colorectal cancer, our most recent registry have any statistics related to the trend among this younger group of adults?
I believe that there will soon be a third publication in terms of the numbers. So basically, if you're aware that the National Cancer Registry actually work hand in hand with the Ministry of Health, so how these numbers of being collected, the statistics being collected, is basically doctors are being given forms to fill up in terms of the types of cancers when it was detected. So I would say that whatever the statistics they are looking that is being published probably is much lower than what we are actually looking at, because if such cases are underreported, we don't know. So in reality, actually, there are more cases as such. So, yeah. So I believe that the third coming publications, if they ever release sometime later on, we're definitely going to see the rising numbers of patients diagnosed with colorectal cancer, and that will also include the younger age group. Yeah.
Mm. Would there be differences in terms of gender, for instance, between young men and young women?
Yeah, there's a slight difference. Often we say that males tend to have a slightly higher risk of getting cancers in general, including colorectal cancer as well, compared to women. So, but I would say that if you look at the current statistics that we are looking at for male, generally for male genders, we are looking at the top will be the colorectal cancers. Mm. Then it goes to lungs, etc. For women's, I think the most predominant is still breast, then followed by colorectal cancers. Yeah.
Number two?
Yeah, number two. Mm. Yeah. But we will see the trend, how it goes in the next, you know, as nowadays also we are looking at lung cancer also getting more and more prevalent. So, well, I'm hoping to see what will the statistics hold for the next publication. Mm. Yeah.
And again, on colorectal cancer among young adults, typically, what stage of disease would it would they come in with?
Yeah. So, in my current practice, most commonly, I'm actually encountering stage 3, stage 4.
That's advanced.
Yes, yes. So I think a lot of work still needs to be done in terms of colorectal screenings, early detections, self-awareness about there is such thing as, you know, colorectal cancers that exist, and how to get yourself checked on that. Yeah.
Mm. So we will definitely touch on that. What are some signs to look out for? How do you go about getting screening early? But I guess a lot of the questions on people's minds right now as they're listening to you is why, right? I know you've said that just that general awareness is perhaps better now and people are more sensitive and getting themselves checked out. But is there physiologically, is there something that's happening, you know, among us, in our bodies, among younger adults in terms of lifestyles and all that, that could be leading to this rising colorectal cancer?
Yeah. So I often tell my patients that what you eat is what you are. So, you know, sedentary lifestyles, food that is rich in carbohydrates, or barbecue foods and all this, they tend to have so-called these carcinogens, especially barbecues and all that. So basically, we say that all this tend to increases the risk, but it's not exactly a direct cause. So in a way that maintaining a healthy lifestyle, eat healthy food does matters, but sometimes colorectal cancers or any cancers, there also partly is because of the malfunctions of the DNAs when it goes haywire and all that. So even though we enforce on the healthy lifestyles and strict diets, healthy diets and all that, we still also need to be aware of how cancers actually occurs. So these are actually based on the whatever information that you can grab, especially from the social medias. But just be aware that it has to be through a legit source, and not just, you know, a simple Google and all that. Yeah.
Lots of fake news going on. Lots of misinformation.
Yes,
but
correct.
One thing is for sure, there is some increased risk already with certain lifestyle practices.
Yeah. Right?
Being sedentary, not exercising.
Yes.
Eating foods that are too high, like you said, in carbohydrates and carcinogens.
Yeah.
You mentioned family history as well. People who are aware that they have a family history,
yes,
would perhaps be more conscious of it. But I think many people still don't take note of that connection.
Yeah.
If you could explain a little bit about family history. And so I guess, you know, when people are looking at their family members around them, what do they need to take note of?
Yeah. So when you talk about cancers generally, certain cancers are actually can be genetic predisposition. But I will say that in general, such numbers are actually small. But in the event, supposedly, if you have a strong family history, here will be your first degree families or your second degrees that actually being diagnosed with cancers at a fairly early age, like 30, 40s, then I would say that you should actually get a doctor's consult to further clarify on this. For example, like breast cancers, colorectal cancers, there are a small percentage of a genetic related predisposition.
Mm-hmm.
So if that occurs, then I would say that the best idea would be to get a doctor's advice. And perhaps if, like say, if it's proven that, you know, you have a strong family histories, the next thing will be to get a geneticist consult, as they will actually guide you on what needs to be done in terms of further testing to prove whether it is indeed that you have a genetic disorders that may relate to increase in the risk of developing certain forms of cancers. Yeah.
So first degree relatives, parents, siblings, immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would say it's more of siblings, and of course, your maternal side, especially your aunt. So these are the most of the these are the histories that often we try to look out for, when we say, are you actually having a strong background of having family risk of getting some form of cancers? Yeah.
Why maternal side?
Usually we say that it's partly because of the DNAs.
Mm.
So the genes are often primarily from the maternal side.
Mm.
So yeah, that okay. It will be going more into the further details.
Yeah, yeah. That would require a different show, a bit of a genetics 101.
Yeah.
So let's go for a quick break because we have learned a lot about the risk and the trend of colorectal cancer among younger adults. When we come back, then we can look at what treatment would look like for them, how they can identify before actually we get the treatment, how should they identify it early, you know, what should they be on the lookout for. Many of you listening are probably within that age group, right? Late 20s, in their 30s, 40s. So definitely something you want to continue to stay tuned to find out about. I'm speaking to consultant clinical oncologist Dr. Jensen Saw about colorectal cancer among younger adults. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. My guest today, Dr. Jensen Saw, a consultant clinical oncologist. We're discussing what millennials and Generation Z should be aware of when it comes to colorectal cancer. You might be thinking, colorectal cancer, surely that's only among older age adults, but we are seeing an increasing trend, not just in Malaysia, but worldwide, of younger adults in their 20s to their 40s becoming newly diagnosed with colorectal cancer. And what are your concerns, Dr. Jensen, when you have an adult in that age bracket, probably just, you know, in their early years of working life, thinking of starting families, right? And then suddenly they're hit with a cancer diagnosis. How does that diagnosis that you're about to give them disrupt their lives as well?
So when a person at a young age being diagnosed with cancers, often not they will go through these common five phases of a response. So first will be the denial part, whereby they just couldn't accept the fact that, you know, the doctors are telling them that, you know, you're diagnosed with cancers. Then you have this anger part where you started to feel that why is it that is happening to them. Then, of course, you have the bargaining part where now you try to find ways to say, if only if I could have done this, I could have done that. Then finally, of course, you move on to this acceptance phase where you started to slowly get your mind processed, this whole thing through. And then that is the only then when you find that the patient will find it, the doctors will find it easier to talk to the patients as well as the families. So how it affects the young people, I will say it affects from the individual, the person itself, and of course to their loved ones. Mm. And of course, we are talking about to the nations as well. So being a young, being young and diagnosed with cancers, first, personally, that will be the spiritual, emotional, psychological effect. And of course, to the loved one, that will be anxieties, there will be concerns from the people who are around you. Sometimes that will also lead to arguments and all that. So a lot of communications is involved right here. And of course, in terms of nation, that will be because if you're young, you are practically could be someone that is, you know, a workforce for the country. So when you are down with illness, means that the country is also down with a manpower or workforce. So it is affect a lot of things when a person diagnosed with, you know, cancers, at a young age.
Mm.
Not so compared to the older ones, yeah.
Mm. So what we want to do is, I guess, try to mitigate that the impact of the cancer hitting people in the prime and most productive years of their lives. Are there signs and symptoms of colorectal cancer that young adults can look out for?
Yeah, so of course, colorectal cancers are often we have these national guidelines on screenings and all that. So the current recommended guidelines are actually at the age of 40, 45. Those days we say that, you know, we start screening at 50s, but now we are moving to a fairly 5 years or 10 years earlier. And of course, as I mentioned, that for those families with strong family histories and all that, that someone close to you or your siblings or your first degree relative diagnosed with at the early age, then perhaps you will also consider getting yourself checked at least 10 years of your someone that has been diagnosed with cancers. So for example, like if your siblings diagnosed with cancer at the age of 40, then there's supposed to be you also need to get a doctor consult to get it screened at least 10 years earlier.
So at the age of 30 for yourself?
Yeah. So but in general, I will say that the current recommended age will be around 45 to get yourself screened.
And it's okay to stick to that for now?
Yes. So of course, guidelines will continuously change and all that. So other than just screening alone, you also need to get doctor's consult in order to know not just the first screening, but what to do next. What if there is something that's found in the scope, or if there's nothing, what will be the next follow-up be? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is actually very important. So it's just not a one-off thingy, but it's a sort of a continuous kind of a assessment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the screening is a colonoscopy.
Yeah. So generally, when we talk about colorectal screening, we talk about scopes, as well as there's also these fecal blood tests that can be actually used to combine with the colonoscopy in order to get a more definitive assessment.
I think the idea of a colonoscopy can be intimidating for some people, but that is still the gold standard for the screening, right? I mean, some people may ask, can I just do the fecal blood test instead, you know?
Yeah. So I think over the years, technology have changed. These days also, they are looking at some other much sophisticated ways of assessing. For example, like a pills that's actually equipped with cameras that it can, you just swallow it through and you pass it out at the end of the day, and they will just collect the information. Every instruments or technologies that use have this downfalls and all that. Even colonoscopy also, it is very dependent on the person who does that and how good they are, how experienced they are. And of course, next will be every individual's their bowels are slightly different. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when they do a colonoscopy, a physician do a colonoscopies, they really need to make sure that they actually screen the entire bowel walls carefully in order not to miss that. And of course, like I said, that every tool has its downfalls. So having just one test alone sometimes is insufficient to tell. So you might actually need a few modalities in order to confirm that. Yeah. Mm.
What about blood tests with cancer markers? Are they useful?
Yeah. So often I do see nowadays a lot of patients actually go to their nearby clinics or GPs to get all these tumor markers done. But in general, I would say that tumor markers is not a definitive tools to confirm that you have cancers or not. Of course, there will be some arguments along the way whereby some doctors feel that if there is a significant rise in the tumor markers, wouldn't that warrant for, you know, further investigation? And that's how you ended up picking cancers or perhaps something wrong at a fairly early age, because sometimes cancers, they can be very asymptomatic, no symptoms at all. Mm. So there can be an argument on that part. But if you ask me, cancer markers definitely is not a definitive tool, but it can assist the doctors in order to make a more precise conclusion on what would the final diagnosis be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So still the colonoscopy and perhaps other tests that the doctor will deem necessary to support. You said some cancers don't have symptoms.
Yep.
Is colorectal cancer one of those?
Well, colorectal cancers, it depends sometimes also on the exactly where the cancer appears in the bowel. So if you look at the normal anatomies of our bowels, we have the small bowels, you have the large bowels, and of course, where the fecal motion is being passed out at the rectum. So each and every location, they can present with some specific signs and symptoms. When we talk about colorectal cancer here, we predominantly speak about the large bowel, not so much of a small bowel, because the number of small bowel cancers are actually very small. So we talk about large bowels, it can happen. The symptoms can be sometimes, if it's large enough, you can have like a pain in the abdomen, a colicky pain. Sometimes patient may have some change in bowel habits. They have some blocks in the stools. And of course, as the cancer goes by, then you may have a condition whereby you start losing weight. You have lost sense of loss or appetite and all that. But these are often come to the stage whereby most likely the cancers could be on the advanced stage at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why that when we talk about colorectal screening, you wanted to do it early because that is the best time when we can tend to pick up something before it becomes symptomatic. Yeah.
Is the idea of colorectal screening that you do it even if you don't experience any symptoms or changes in bowel habits and things like that?
So colorectal cancer is one of the most studied cancers because it has been existed for a long, long time. So during my medical years, we talk about this the sequence of from a precancerous changes to eventually it turns into cancerous in the bowel. So this so-called the term the lesion. So sometimes it comes in the polyps and all that. So when a person that does a scope, be is a gastroenterologist or be a colorectal surgeon, these are the things that they are going to look out for, polyps and all that. If they found there is a polyps, they will biopsy it because these polyps are actually not cancerous yet, but eventually it has a high tendency to turn malignant. So when colorectal screening is being done, i.e. the colonoscope, basically these are the things that they wanted to detect. Yeah. Then from there, if let's say there is a polyps and a specimen being taken out and sent and studied and shows that it is indeed a polyps that, you know, then subsequently, the doctors will actually advise on what will be the next screenings, next colonoscopy going to be. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. You know, you mentioned some symptoms like changes in bowel habits, blood in the stool. I guess people may dismiss some of these or think that maybe I just ate something wrong. I'm just going to wait for it to go away. So when does it become something that people should actually be alarmed about?
I think the moment, of course, not all blocks in the stools are related to cancers. Sometimes you can actually have hemorrhoids and all that. So in a way that as a person that is non-medicals, you probably would not really weigh in the significance of all these symptoms that you're having. So the best way will actually still be that you get at least your family physician's consult, or you can actually go to any of these hospitals. Sometimes they do offer all these packagings where they offer screenings at the when you are deemed to be suitable in that age group. So that is how you actually get your confirmation. Yeah. So in a way, if you just guessing, sometimes you may be wrong.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And information on the internet sometimes may not be what you are expecting. So at the end of the day, it will still, the best will be someone that you know of, the doctors, to give you further advice.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And when it comes to young adults who have been diagnosed, you'll be talking to them about treatment options. Is treatment for their cancer perhaps different compared to older patients, or are the treatment options the same for them?
Yeah. So, of course, as you age older, definitely you just don't come with one illnesses. Sometimes you can have diabetes, you can have a history of heart disease, you know, hypertensions and all that. So, and there are also cases where they can have patients comes with kidney failures. So definitely the older age being diagnosed with cancers are more challenging in terms of treatments.
Yeah.
We are also concerned about the age, their performance status and all that. At the same time also, the younger part, if they were diagnosed with cancers also, that means that, as I said, their performance status, probably they are much fitter. But at the same time, there are other issues that could actually hinder in terms of the ideal treatments given. For example, like it would involve cost, younger people, financially they are also kind of a bit more constrained because they just start working. So yeah, every age comes with a different set of issues to tackle when talk about which of the most appropriate treatment to be given.
What would it look like for a younger patient sitting in front of you? I guess you would still, while taking into consideration their constraints, you would still map out, I guess, you know, what their treatment journey. So if you could give us an idea of what that would look like. And also, what would be the prognosis? If you say that many of them are coming in stage 3 and 4, what are you hoping to achieve for them in terms of outcomes?
Okay. So we tend to separate the treatments between the early stage as well as the advanced stage. So early stage, you're looking at stage 1, 2, and 3, whereby the treatments, we are more of looking at a curative intent. In a stage 4, there are also a huge variant of stage 4, but often in general, I will say the treatment will be more of controlling the cancer itself. It is treatable, but it's non-curable. But in the early stage here, provided that, you know, everything within the ideal situations, actually the treatments doesn't really differ much between an younger age group or the older age group. So definitely over the last few decades, there has been a burst in terms of treatment discoveries. So there are more and more options actually available right now. And that would actually give a longer, more treatment options along the way. So, yeah. So I would say that the early stage in terms of the prognosis, definitely the earlier the better. So if looking at stage 1, we are looking at after the surgeries, then the chances of survival is as good as about 90 and above. But we're also looking at, you know, adding on further therapies. How would that actually increases the chance of cure? So for stage 2, stage 3, then we'll see that there will be a gradual reduce in the successfuls of a curative intent. But we are working hard on that in order to include all forms of treatments just to ensure that, you know, the curative intent is there.
I want to ask specifically about young women as well. And what hope can you offer for them in terms of being able to, you know, when they complete the treatment, go on to have a family and things like that?
So definitely there are certain treatments that are being offered to patients. In a way, they might actually affect their body hormones and all that, because some of our organs, especially our reproductive organs, they tend to be kind of sensitive to the treatments that is being provided. So, but then again, with the modern medicines that we are experiencing right now, often not, I do encounter cases whereby some patients, after certain form of systemic therapies like chemotherapies or targeted therapies, they may have the so-called subfertility. It's not completely say that you are impotent, but subfertile. But with the modern technologies of, you know, assisted pregnancies and all that, it shouldn't be an issue. But of course, at the end of the day, what is more important is to have these conversations with the patients, you know, about the side effects and all that. That is very important, especially in the younger age group, because they have long ways to go. So we want to make sure that, you know, all these are being well informed before they make the final decision. Yeah.
Absolutely. So if we can, I guess, leave our listeners with a message on what they can do today, especially our younger listeners. You said a lot about screening and knowing your family history so that you can identify if you had relatives who were diagnosed with cancer young, and then you'd know that you should go for your screening 10 years before your relatives, age of diagnosis, right? But perhaps a little bit about prevention as well. We can't prevent cancers, not completely, but to a large extent, perhaps we can do something to reduce our risk.
Yes.
Unfortunately, when it comes to lifestyle, we keep saying the same things over and over again, don't we?
They
all relate to other diseases as well.
Yes.
What would you say to younger adults to impart that urgency to them when it comes to the importance of these lifestyle factors?
Yeah. So I think lifestyle change is very important. You need to maintain a healthy life, healthy lifestyles. You need to exercise. You need to eat well. Other than that, of course, you need to equip yourself with information on health and all that. Sometimes we tend to get ourselves too busy, work-related and all that. But often not, we tend to forget what is the most essential is your body. If your body is not taken care well of, then how would that actually help in terms of you are taking care of the families, your loved ones? So, and of course, informations are flooring, is everywhere. So, being to know about all these cancers, the prevalence, and all that, you can always go to the right source of source to get it. For example, like me being part of the committees of the Malaysian Oncological Societies, we have this website whereby we actually share about such information, awareness and all that. So that those are the reliable source that where you can actually go to look up to, including the National Cancer Society, NCSM. And of course, further information, the best would be to get your family physicians to talk about it, or to go to a doctors that bigger centers that they actually offer such kind of consultations. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Jensen.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been speaking to Dr. Jensen Saw, consultant clinical oncologist, with his messages for millennials and the Generation Z, what you need to be aware of when it comes to colorectal cancer. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.